Ascent Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Self-Awareness by Harvard Business Review. Narrated by Daniel Henning and Rachel Perry. 1. The First Component of Emotional Intelligence by Daniel Goleman. Self-awareness is the first component of emotional intelligence, which makes sense when one considers that the Delphic Oracle gave the advice to know thyself thousands of years ago. Self-awareness means having a deep understanding of one's emotions, strengths, weaknesses, needs, and drives. People with strong self-awareness are neither overly critical nor unrealistically hopeful. Rather, they are honest, with themselves and with others. People who have a high degree of self-awareness recognize how their feelings affect them, other people, and their job performance. Thus, a self-aware person who knows that tight deadlines bring out the worst in him plans his time carefully and gets his work done well in advance. Another person with high self-awareness will be able to work with a demanding client. She will understand the client's impact on her moods and the deeper reasons for her frustration. Their trivial demands take us away from the real work that needs to be done, she might explain. And she will go one step further and turn her anger into something constructive. Self-awareness extends to a person's understanding of his or her values and goals. Someone who's highly self-aware knows where he is headed and why. So, for example, he will be able to be firm in turning down a job offer that is tempting financially but does not fit with his principles or long-term goals. A person who lacks self-awareness is apt to make decisions that bring on inner turmoil by treading on buried values. The money looked good, so I signed on, someone might say 2 years into a job. But the work means so little to me that I'm constantly bored. The decisions of self-aware people mesh with their values. Consequently, they often find work to be energizing. How can one recognize self-awareness? First and foremost, it shows itself as candor and an ability to assess oneself realistically. People with high self-awareness are able to speak accurately and openly, although not necessarily effusively or confessionally, about their emotions and the impact they have on their work. For instance, one manager I know of was skeptical about a new personal shopper service that her company, a major department store chain, was about to introduce. Without prompting from her team or her boss, she offered them an explanation. "It's hard for me to get behind the rollout of this service," she admitted, "because I really wanted to run the project, but I wasn't selected. Bear with me while I deal with that." The manager did indeed examine her feelings. A week later, she was supporting the project fully. Such self-knowledge often shows itself in the hiring process. Ask a candidate to describe a time he got carried away by his feelings and did something he later regretted. Self-aware candidates will be frank in admitting to failure and will often tell their stories with a smile. One of the hallmarks of self-awareness is a self-deprecating sense of humor. Self-awareness can also be identified during performance reviews. Self-aware people know and are comfortable talking about their limitations and strengths, and they often demonstrate a thirst for constructive criticism. By contrast, people with low self-awareness interpret the message that they need to improve as a threat or a sign of failure. Self-aware people can also be recognized by their self-confidence. They have a firm grasp of their capabilities and are less likely to set themselves up to fail by, for example, overstretching on assignments. They know, too, when to ask for help. And the risks they take on the job are calculated. They won't ask for a challenge that they know they can't handle alone. They'll play to their strengths. Consider the actions of a mid-level employee who was invited to sit in on a strategy meeting with her company's top executives. Although she was the most junior person in the room, she did not sit there quietly, listening in awestruck or fearful silence. She knew she had a head for clear logic and the skill to present ideas persuasively, and she offered cogent suggestions about the company's strategy. At the same time, her self-awareness stopped her from wandering into territory where she knew she was weak. Despite the value of having self-aware people in the workplace, my research indicates that senior executives don't often give self-awareness the credit it deserves when they look for potential leaders. Many executives mistake candor about feelings for wimpiness and fail to give due respect to employees who openly acknowledge their shortcomings. Such people are too readily dismissed as not tough enough to lead others. In fact, the opposite is true. In the first place, people generally admire and respect candor. Furthermore, leaders are constantly required to make judgment calls that require a candid assessment of capabilities, their own and those of others. Do we have the management expertise to acquire a competitor? Can we launch a new product within 6 months? People who assess themselves honestly, that is, self-aware people, are well suited to do the same for the organizations they run. What makes a leader? What distinguishes great leaders from merely good ones? It isn't IQ or technical skills, says Daniel Goleman. It's emotional intelligence, a group of 5 skills that enable the best leaders to maximize their own and their followers' performance. When senior managers at one company had a critical mass of emotional intelligence, EI, capabilities, their divisions outperformed yearly earnings goals by 20%. The EI skills are self-awareness, knowing one's strengths, weaknesses, drives, values, and impact on others. Self-regulation, controlling or redirecting disruptive impulses and moods. Motivation, relishing achievement for its own sake. Empathy, understanding other people's emotional makeup. Social skill, building rapport with others to move them in desired directions. We're each born with certain levels of EI skills, but we can strengthen these abilities through persistence, practice, and feedback from colleagues or coaches.
2. What self-awareness really is and how to cultivate it, by Tasha Urich. Self-awareness seems to have become the latest management buzzword, and for good reason. Research suggests that when we see ourselves clearly, we are more confident and more creative. We make sounder decisions, build stronger relationships, and communicate more effectively. We're less likely to lie, cheat, and steal. We are better workers who get more promotions, and we're more effective leaders with more satisfied employees and more profitable companies. As an organizational psychologist and executive coach, I've had a ringside seat to the power of leadership self-awareness for nearly 15 years. I've also seen how attainable this skill is. Yet, when I first began to delve into the research on self-awareness, I was surprised by the striking gap between the science and the practice of self-awareness. All things considered, we knew surprisingly little about improving this critical skill. 4 years ago, my team of researchers and I embarked on a large-scale scientific study of self-awareness. In 10 separate investigations with nearly 5,000 participants, we examined what self-awareness really is, why we need it, and how we can increase it. Our research revealed many surprising roadblocks, myths, and truths about what self-awareness is and what it takes to improve it. We found that even though most people believe they are self-aware, self-awareness is a truly rare quality. We estimate that only 10% to 15% of the people we studied actually fit the criteria. 3 findings in particular stood out and are helping us develop practical guidance for how leaders can learn to see themselves more clearly. About our research. The major components of our research included analyzing the results of nearly 800 existing scientific studies to understand how previous researchers defined self-awareness, unearthing themes and trends, and identifying the limitations of these investigations. Surveying thousands of people across countries and industries to explore the relationship between self-awareness and several key attitudes and behaviors, like job satisfaction, empathy, happiness, and stress. We also surveyed those who knew these people well to determine the relationship between self-ratings and other ratings of self-awareness. Developing and validating a 7-factor multi-rater assessment of self-awareness, because our review of the research didn't identify any strong, well-validated, comprehensive measures. Conducting in-depth interviews with 50 people who had dramatically improved their self-awareness to learn about the key actions that helped them get there, as well as their beliefs and practices. Our interviewees included entrepreneurs, professionals, executives, and even a Fortune 100 CEO. To be included in our study, participants had to clear 4 hurdles. 1. They had to see themselves as highly self-aware, which we measured using our validated assessment. 2. Using that same assessment, someone who knew them well had to agree. 3. They had to believe they'd experienced an upward trend of self-awareness over the course of their life. Each participant was asked to recall their level of self-awareness at different stages of their life up to their current. For example, early adulthood, ages 19 to 24, adulthood, ages 25 to 34, midlife, ages 35 to 49, mature adulthood, ages 50 to 80, and 4. The person rating them had to agree with the participants' recollections. Surveying hundreds of managers and their employees to learn more about the relationship between leadership self-awareness and employee attitudes like commitment, leadership effectiveness, and job satisfaction. Co-authors of this work are Haley M. Vojny, Longwood University, Phoenix Van Wagner, Leeds School of Business, University of Colorado, Eric D. Hegestad, University of North Carolina, Charlotte, and April Broderson, Metropolitan State University of Denver. We want to thank Dr. Stephanie Johnson for her contributions to our study as well. Number 1. There are 2 types of self-awareness. For the last 50 years, researchers have used varying definitions of self-awareness. For example, some see it as the ability to monitor our inner world, whereas others label it as a temporary state of self-consciousness. Still others describe it as the difference between how we see ourselves and how others see us. So before we could focus on how to improve self-awareness, we needed to synthesize these findings and create an overarching definition. Across the studies we examined, 2 broad categories of self-awareness kept emerging. The first, which we dubbed internal self-awareness, represents how clearly we see our own values, passions, aspirations fit with our environment, reactions, including thoughts, feelings, behaviors, strengths and weaknesses, and impact on others. We've found that internal self-awareness is associated with higher job and relationship satisfaction, personal and social control, and happiness. It is negatively related to anxiety, stress, and depression. The second category, external self-awareness, means understanding how other people view us in terms of those same factors listed earlier. Our research shows that people who know how others see them are more skilled at showing empathy and taking others' perspectives. For leaders who see themselves as their employees do, their employees tend to have a better relationship with them, feel more satisfied with them, and see them as more effective in general. It's easy to assume that being high on one type of awareness would mean being high on the other, but our research has found virtually no relationship between them. As a result, We identify 4 leadership archetypes, each with a different set of opportunities to improve, as seen in Figure 1. Figure 1. The 4 self-awareness archetypes. This 2x2 maps internal self-awareness, how well you know yourself, against external self-awareness, how well you understand how others see you. High internal self-awareness, low external self-awareness. Introspectors. They're clear on who they are, but don't challenge their own views or search for blind spots by getting feedback from others. This can harm their relationships and limit their success. High internal self-awareness, high external self-awareness. Aware. They know who they are, what they want to accomplish, and seek out and value others' opinions. This is where leaders begin to fully realize the true benefits of self-awareness. Low internal self-awareness, low external self-awareness. Seekers. They don't yet know who they are, what they stand for, or how their teams see them. As a result, they might feel stuck or frustrated with their performance and relationships. Low internal self-awareness, high external self-awareness. Pleasers. They can be so focused on appearing a certain way to others that they could be overlooking what matters to them. Over time, they tend to make choices that aren't in service of their own success and fulfillment. When it comes to internal and external self-awareness, it's tempting to value one over the other. But leaders must actively work on both seeing themselves clearly and getting feedback to understand how others see them. The highly self-aware people we interviewed were actively focused on balancing the scale. Take Jeremiah, a marketing manager. Early in his career, he focused primarily on internal self-awareness. For example, deciding to leave his career in accounting to pursue his passion for marketing. But when he had the chance to get candid feedback during a company training, he realized that he wasn't focused enough on how he was showing up. Jeremiah has since placed an equal importance on both types of self-awareness, which he believes has helped him reach a new level of success and fulfillment. The bottom line is that self-awareness isn't one truth. It's a delicate balance of 2 distinct, even competing viewpoints. If you're interested in learning where you stand in each category, you can take a free shortened version of our multi-rater self-awareness assessment at insight-quiz.com. Number 2. Experience and power hinder self-awareness. Contrary to popular belief, studies have shown that people do not always learn from experience, that expertise does not help people root out false information, and that seeing ourselves as highly experienced can keep us from doing our homework, seeking out disconfirming evidence, and questioning our assumptions. And just as experience can lead to a false sense of confidence about our performance, it can also make us overconfident about our level of self-knowledge. For example, one study found that more experienced managers were less accurate in assessing their leadership effectiveness compared with less experienced managers. Similarly, the more power a leader holds, the more likely they are to overestimate their skills and abilities. One study of more than 3,600 leaders across a variety of roles and industries found that, relative to lower-level leaders, higher-level leaders more significantly overvalued their skills compared with others' perceptions. In fact, this pattern existed for 19 out of the 20 competencies the researchers measured, including emotional self-awareness, accurate self-assessment, empathy, trustworthiness, and leadership performance. Researchers have proposed 2 primary explanations for this phenomenon. First, by virtue of their level, senior leaders simply have fewer people above them who can provide candid feedback. Second, the more power a leader wields, the less comfortable people will be to give them constructive feedback, for fear it will hurt their careers. business professor James O'Toole has added that as one's power grows, one's willingness to listen shrinks, either because they think they know more than their employees or because seeking feedback will come at a cost. But this doesn't have to be the case. One analysis showed that the most successful leaders, as rated by 360-degree reviews of leadership effectiveness, counteract this tendency by seeking frequent critical feedback from bosses, peers, employees, their board, and so on. They become more self-aware in the process and come to be seen as more effective by others. Likewise, in our interviews, we found that people who improved their external self-awareness did so by seeking out feedback from loving critics. That is, people who have their best interests in mind and are willing to tell them the truth. To ensure they don't overreact or overcorrect based on one person's opinion, they also gut-check difficult or surprising feedback with others. Number 3. Introspection doesn't always improve self-awareness. It is also widely assumed that introspection, examining the causes of our own thoughts, feelings, and behaviors, improves self-awareness. After all, what better way to know ourselves than by reflecting on why we are the way we are? Yet one of the most surprising findings of our research is that people who introspect are less self-aware and report worse job satisfaction and well-being. Other research has shown similar patterns. The problem with introspection isn't that it is categorically ineffective. It's that most people are doing it incorrectly. To understand this, let's look at arguably the most common introspective question. Why? We ask this when trying to understand our emotions. Why do I like employee A so much more than employee B? Or our behavior. Why did I fly off the handle with that employee? Or our attitudes. Why am I so against this deal? As it turns out, why is a surprisingly ineffective self-awareness question. Research has shown that we simply do not have access to many of the unconscious thoughts, feelings, and motives we're searching for. And because so much is trapped outside of our conscious awareness, we tend to invent answers that feel true but are often wrong. For example, after an uncharacteristic outburst at an employee, a new manager may jump to the conclusion that it happened because she isn't cut out for management, when the real reason was a bad case of low blood sugar. Consequently, the problem with asking why isn't just how wrong we are, but how confident we are that we are right. The human mind rarely operates in a rational fashion, and our judgments are seldom free from bias. We tend to pounce on whatever insights we find without questioning their validity or value. We ignore contradictory evidence, and we force our thoughts to conform to our initial explanations. Another negative consequence of asking why, especially when trying to explain an undesired outcome, is that it invites unproductive, negative thoughts. In our research, we found that people who are very introspective are also more likely to get caught in ruminative patterns. For example, if an employee who receives a bad performance review asks, "Why did I get such a bad rating?" they're likely to land on an explanation focused on their fears, shortcomings, or insecurities, rather than a rational assessment of their strengths and weaknesses. For this reason, frequent self-analyzers are more depressed and anxious and experience poorer well-being. So if why isn't the right introspective question, is there a better one? My research team scoured hundreds of pages of interview transcripts with highly self-aware people to see if they approached introspection differently. Indeed, there was a clear pattern. Although the word why appeared fewer than 150 times, the word what appeared more than 1,000 times. Therefore, to increase productive self-insight and decrease unproductive rumination, we should ask what, not why. What questions help us stay objective, future-focused, and empowered to act on our new insights? For example, consider Jose, an entertainment industry veteran we interviewed who hated his job. Where many would have gotten stuck thinking, "Why do I feel so terrible?" he asked, "What are the situations that make me feel terrible, and what do they have in common?" He realized that he'd never be happy in that career, and it gave him the courage to pursue a new and far more fulfilling one in wealth management. Similarly, Robin, a customer service leader who was new to her job, needed to understand a piece of negative feedback she'd gotten from an employee. Instead of asking, "Why did you say this about me?" Robin inquired, "What are the steps I need to take in the future to do a better job?" This helped them move to solutions rather than focusing on the unproductive patterns of the past. A final case is Paul, who told us about learning that the business he'd recently purchased was no longer profitable. At first, all he could ask himself was, "Why wasn't I able to turn things around?" But he quickly realized that he didn't have the time or energy to beat himself up. He had to figure out what to do next. He started asking, "What do I need to do to move forward in a way that minimizes the impact to our customers and employees?" He created a plan and was able to find creative ways to do as much good for others as possible while winding down the business. When all that was over, he challenged himself to articulate what he learned from the experience. His answer both helped him avoid similar mistakes in the future and helped others learn from them too. These qualitative findings have been bolstered by others' quantitative research. In one study, psychologists J. Gregory Hickson and William Swan gave a group of undergraduates negative feedback on a test of their sociability, likability, and interestingness. Some were given time to think about why they were the kind of person they were, while others were asked to think about what kind of person they were. When the researchers had them evaluate the accuracy of the feedback, the why students spent their energy rationalizing and denying what they'd learned, and the what students were more open to this new information and how they might learn from it. Hickson and Swan's rather bold conclusion was that thinking about why one is the way one is may be no better than not thinking about oneself at all. All of this brings us to conclude: leaders who focus on building both internal and external self-awareness, who seek honest feedback from loving critics, and who ask what instead of why, can learn to see themselves more clearly and reap the many rewards that increased self-knowledge delivers. And no matter how much progress we make, there's always more to learn. That's one of the things that makes the journey to self-awareness so exciting.
3. Successful leaders know what made them who they are. By Bernie Swain. Can you identify the one person, event, or influence that made you who you are as a leader and a person? Over the past 10 years, I've put that question to 100 of the eminent people I represented as chairman of the Washington Speakers Bureau: Madeleine Albright, Tom Brokaw, Colin Powell, Terry Bradshaw, Condoleezza Rice, and many others. I was curious to find out what they felt were the turning points in their lives, the defining moments and influences from which they draw motivation and inspiration. Identifying the foundational moments of our success allows us to maximize our potential, uncover our own passions, and become better leaders. In my case, the defining moment in my life was the realization that I was never going to enjoy working for other people, a recognition that paradoxically came to me right at the moment when I was on the verge of being offered my dream job, which I eventually turned down to become an entrepreneur. The realization helped fuel me even during periods of uncertainty by reinforcing my will to succeed and comforting me that I was on the right trajectory.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?